We're all pretty certain AI is being used to track us these days, but just how much? Well, that's another story. So how should we solve this? Should we have more regulations? Should we have more Overwatch? Who exactly should enforce regulations? Should we break up big tech? Will that solve it? Unfortunately, it's just not that simple. From the Source Studios, this is the AI to Uplift Humanity podcast. I'm Justin Brady, and today I'm joined with Bonnie Glick, the director of the Kroc Institute for Tech Diplomacy at Purdue University. Bonnie, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, Justin, it's such a pleasure to be here.
So you previously served as the Deputy Administrator and COO of the U.S. Agency for International Development, and I believe you got on our radar because Paul Allen, the founder of SOAR, he, I think, was reading your recent piece in Desert News about AI being used for nefarious purposes. I think that's what that piece was kind of talking about, right?
Yes, exactly. AI and religious freedom was, I think, the particular focus of that piece, but it does delve into where AI, artificial intelligence, is, while initially was set up to do great things for the world, has in some countries and in some instances kind of been turned on its head and used for nefarious ends, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and it's a really good piece, by the way. We'll make sure to drop that in the show notes page at soar.com/podcast. We'll make sure that's in there. But here's my, let's start broadly. What are some of those concerning uses of AI you're seeing? You know, I think everyone would agree, like, you know, AI technology can be used for bad or good. I think that's, you know, pretty 30,000 foot view level. I think everyone probably agrees with that. But what are those instances, those examples of AI you're seeing that really, like, really keep you up at night?
Yeah, let's take a few steps back a few decades and think about why artificial intelligence was originally invented. And there were a couple of reasons why it was originally invented here in the United States. And one of those areas was for finding a way to digest everything that was out there in the internet. In the early 2000s, taking us back quite a ways, finding ways for search engines, which are what apply AI on a constant basis, for search engines to be able to distill all of the information that was out there to answer the particular question of, you know, when is the best time of year to harvest a potato?
And that's what I usually search for.
It is what I search for. And but then simultaneously, when you think about distilling down the internet, what are some of the hardest problems to solve? If you had access to all of that information, how could you solve some of the world's hardest problems, like finding cures for diseases, finding treatments that would be reasonable and useful for patients anywhere in the world, because all you need is a connection to be able to inform doctors of how have these symptoms in your patient been seen in other parts of the world? It's taken us a really long way in terms of being able to address some rare and under-researched diseases around the world. So AI was originally intended for these very noble purposes,
right,
bringing information to people and with an eye in particular towards solving some of these very difficult healthcare problems. It's changed over time as things happen, and we now see artificial intelligence in pretty much all parts of our lives, so much so that we don't even notice it most of the time. So you're sending an email to someone and you've put their email address into the address line and you start it with dear, and you're about to write the person's name, dear Justin. But Justin automatically populates
right,
because the email address is yours.
Yeah.
So that's the AI is all around us. You go to an ATM machine to take some cash out of the bank, and they remind you what your most frequent transaction is at the bank and suggest that you take out that amount of cash.
Oh, I need to get like a new bank, I think. Mine's not that fancy.
Yeah, yours says you don't have enough in your account, so
we weren't supposed to talk about that,
else.
Bonnie. Come on.
So, just kidding. But to your question of how then has artificial intelligence been deployed around the world in ways that are harmful to people? Well, let's think. We can back up maybe like 10 years to security services around the world using artificial intelligence and facial recognition technology to track down bad guys and for personal security services. So you go to large cities all over the world, really, whether it's Chicago or Mexico City or London, and these are cities that have cameras deployed all over the cities catch bad guys. And that's how a lot of crimes are solved, is through collecting facial images of people who are committing crimes and bringing them to law enforcement, and then all kinds of algorithms are run, and we're able to identify who a bad guy is who broke into a store. But that facial recognition now, fast forward to today, is being used in ways in authoritarian countries to monitor the activities of everyday citizens.
Right, yeah.
We heard about it most during the Trump administration, when President Trump restricted the use in the United States of five different Chinese technologies. And the one that we all heard of constantly was Huawei for 5G telecommunications, that we had to rip and replace any Huawei installations. The one that we didn't hear about that much was a company called Hikvision. And Hikvision is a Chinese company that deploys cameras for facial recognition all over the world, and quite possibly in those same law enforcement situations. Possibly they're deployed in Europe and Latin America and Africa. But the reason that China has gained such expertise and has been able to hone their facial recognition technology so well is that they spy on their citizens, and use these cameras to monitor religious minorities, all citizens, but in particular the area that that I'm concerned about, and this is what keeps me up, is that they monitor religious minorities to determine, one, if they're up to no good, and two, then, to determine what no good looks like to the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah.
Right? So we talk a lot about the Uyghur Muslim population in Xinjiang province of China. And the Chinese have systematically used facial recognition technology to, I'll just put in air quotes, to make the case for arresting and arbitrarily detaining Uyghur Muslims for things as simple as you grew a beard, or you entered a mosque,
right,
or you practiced your faith.
Right.
And so that's the kind of thing where they've honed it down to an art form, and now they're exporting it around the world.
Yeah, and so I want to dig into here in a second, like those particular uses of it. But you bring up China, which I'm glad you brought up, because you wrote a recent piece in The Hill about Some people call for just big tech should be broken up and regulated, right? Like that's one of the calls we hear all the time. Just break them up, regulate them, and that'll solve the problem. But you take a different stance on that because you have a little bit more data about this than most people. So why isn't that the best path?
So I tend not to be extreme in the things that I do. You know, that whole thing of moderation is a good thing. Big tech, and you know, that can mean any number of things to people, but I think by and large, we're talking about the Googles and the Facebooks and the Twitters and the Microsofts. So these are all companies that have grown tremendously over the last, in the case of Microsoft, let's say 40 years, but the others in the last 10 to 20 years. And their growth has been astronomical. And why is that? It's because of innovation and the culture of innovation that's fostered in the United States. And so when people say, you know, they're out there shaking their hands and saying, we need to break up big tech, there are a couple of problems with that. One, in antitrust law in the United States, you can only break up monopolies.
Right.
And these aren't monopolies, quite frankly, right? There are other search engines besides Google. They're just the biggest. There are other social media platforms. I mean, here you're talking about Facebook and Twitter, and they compete with each other.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, there was a big push to break up Microsoft as a monopoly.
Oh, well,
Microsoft is not a monopoly.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. So the only monopoly, at least in my lifetime, that has ever been broken up successfully through antitrust law was AT&T. And AT&T today is not the same as AT&T of the 1970s and 80s.
Right.
Which was broken up by federal regulators. So I know that people get upset when they think that these billionaires have an outsized amount of influence over politics in the United States or over our social lives, over our teenagers, over whatever it will be that you're angry about on that particular day. But the truth is they're not monopolies. And also, they have been critical for American growth all over the world. So tell me this, Justin. Would you rather have every member of your family part of Facebook, where they share photos and they tell little anodyne stories about what they're up to today? Or would you rather have that shared on the Chinese equivalent of that? Right?
Well, neither. Neither. Can I pick neither?
They could be neither.
I dumped Facebook years ago because it was terrifying. That's funny.
So that's my take. Innovation and the calls to break up big tech in the United States have really focused also on why American platforms have to be deregulated, but giving an exception to foreign platforms.
Right. So, I mean, that's a really good perspective because in that piece, you wrote something that I agree with you, right? These big tech companies aren't monopolies. And like they rose to fame so quickly and they're already just being disrupted by other companies, right? Like a lot of experts are saying Facebook's days are numbered. Like no one's even using it. Their users are leaving by the month. And so like, but you wrote something interesting. Like if we did somehow, I don't know legally how we'd do it, but if we did somehow break up these big tech companies, that would give China, what you were referring to earlier, an upper hand. Can you describe how that would help the Chinese?
Sure. The word that the legislation likes to tout, this proposed legislation, is competition. And saying that these American big tech companies are anti-competitive. Well, I would argue, as you just did, Justin, that is incorrect. Facebook is constantly facing challengers. Google is constantly facing challengers. So they're not anti-competitive.
Right.
At the same time, when you do have a legit monopoly run out of the People's Republic of China and controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, that is something that we would be enabling through this American Competition Act. And the American provided competition would allow Chinese or Russian or Iranian or other malign actors to propagate on our social media while continuing to keep our citizens cut off from their systems, because they don't operate based on American law. They operate based on their own authoritarian systems. So we're tying a hand behind our backs for competition and simultaneously tying the other hand behind our back because we're opening our systems to foreign malign interests.
Right. And if they were all regulated, I think you wrote this in the piece, but if they were all regulated and we broke them up, we'd have to publicize some of that data, right? And then we'd basically publicize that proprietary data that helps those companies, and the Chinese would get that too, and we'd lose our competitive edges.
Correct. And it descends from there into shedding our intellectual property rights, which are basically the gold standard of American competition.
Sure. So I want to get, and to your point earlier, you mentioned like the Facebooks and Googles are constantly having to defend themselves. Like within the last, couple of years, like everyone thinks Google is unmovable, right? Or Amazon is unmovable. And I actually had these, in another life, in another podcast, I was having this discussion with Governor John Hickenlooper, now Senator Hickenlooper, and a few others about like, well, Amazon holds the keys to commerce and we have to regulate them. And I'm like, yeah, but Warby Parker and Allbirds and Rothy's are three examples of companies who didn't need Amazon and actually did quite well and had like billion-dollar valuations. And now we're seeing like Walmart cutting right back into Amazon's profits and Amazon starting to flatline. So I think everyone just thinks big tech companies, I don't know why they think this, but are just unmovable and you can't beat them. But they get, you know, if you look at really the scale of industry, big tech companies don't last as long as some of the older companies from like the 60s and 70s. And to that point, like I've been using DuckDuckGo now for the last like year or two, and I feel like it's way better than Google because I feel like Google has manipulated and adjusted that algorithm to such a degree, it's no longer useful to me. But DuckDuckGo seemingly, maybe this is just my own bias, but seemingly I get more, I want to say pure results. So I don't know if DuckDuckGo is going to replace Google, but in my mind, they're nipping at their heels pretty quickly. So I want to get to like, what would, you know, someone might say, because throughout all history, whenever new technology comes around, there's always the alarmists every time that say, this is going to kill us all. This is going to end the world. I think like Tristan Harris in his Social Dilemma video is saying how social media is destroying us all and it's manipulating our minds. And then he gives this example of like, well, no one was scared of the bicycle when it came out, right? So this is different. You should listen to us. And I was like, bro, people were scared of the bicycle.
Right.
Like they, it was supposed to damage women's reproductive organs. It was supposed to hypnotize people because of the spinning wheel and make them crazy. So when, like, how do we know, is AI different? Like, why is AI different in your mind? Why is this something we should actually be concerned about?
So I think the level of concern is based really most on how AI gets perverted. And it is a tough call there to say, how do we know, who are we to judge when AI is being misused or abused?
Sure,
and I think our societies have reached this point where there's a sufficient amount, not a sufficient amount, I mean, I'm sure there will always be more, but there is certainly a large number of what are called civil society organizations, human rights groups that call out the bad actors when they see them, governments that call out the bad actors or the bad actions. One of the greatest things that we have in the United States is our First Amendment right to free speech. And you see no shortage of people exercising their right to free speech when it comes finding bad stuff that's going on.
Yep, true.
So I think that we have a self-policing mechanism that works. Those same people, even on a much, much braver level, who are willing to call out authoritarian governments for their malign activities, they will remain. It's part of people loving freedom around the world and feeling that they have to stand up for something. We have people who will call out the Chinese Communist Party, the Russians in Ukraine. We haven't even gotten into Russia and the way that they are manipulating artificial intelligence and misinformation in their attack on Ukraine. But I think humans in general are good people and will make the calls. You talked about the conversation that you had with Senator Hickenlooper and others. It's people in the United States are funny to me. We love success and we condemn success at the same time.
You're so right.
So, you know, you want that American dream of being very successful, very prosperous, and then you're angry that other people are successful. And so I think with people and this, the big tech argument has become so personalized down to the Mark Zuckerbergs and the Jeff Bezoses. But when you think about it, Amazon must have 100,000 or more people who work there. And those are people who are all developing amazing technologies that are changing the way, in the case of Amazon, we shop or we use a secure cloud to store our information or watch videos or music. And so we don't complain about that when we're watching Amazon Prime, but we will complain nonetheless about the billionaire who owns Amazon. It's a little bit two-faced in my mind. We should hail their success and have watchdogs out there.
Yeah.
And that's what the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and the antitrust lawyers do. But I think at the end of the day, trying to legislate the activities of individuals and corporations is not good for America.
Right. Now, the FTC is a regulator, though, right?
Yeah,
so I like
course.
One of the in the Desert News piece that you wrote, that's how you got on our radar. You mentioned that we should call out bad uses of AI. Completely agree. And you mentioned that we should set boundaries around AI's use. Again, completely agree. But here's where it gets tricky. Like, and I think maybe you kind of answered this earlier, but like, who sets the boundaries? Because if it's the government, we see, as you indicated during the show, we see nefarious uses for AI.
Yeah.
But if it's like think tanks, maybe, like how much authority do they really have? And you also indicated like one of the beautiful things over in this country is free speech and people's ability to call things out, people's ability to quickly organize against nefarious actors. So what boundaries should we set and who sets them?
Well, the wonderful thing about, again, the United States is this free market, and it's a free market of economics and it's a free market of ideas. And so when I think about who sets the boundaries, there are limits to what regulators are able to do. And that is, I think, by design. So they're given a certain level, certain restrictions under which regulations can be proscribed. And at the end of the day, then laws are interpreted. And laws are then interpreted by courts. And you have this balance of power between the executive branch and the judiciary branch, where it's gotten tricky with this anti-competitive legislation is that's the legislative branch, the third branch of our government, stepping in and saying, but we want a piece of this action because there's clearly right. something going on here. And we need to make sure that we have a handle on it and control over it. Well, what they're trying to do is control a free market. And I think at the end of the day, Americans will look at that and say, that's not what we're designed to do.
All right. And with our last few minutes, I need to talk to the listeners for just a second, Bonnie. Can you hold the line? Because I want to ask about maybe AI as being the great equalizer. I want to ask you that. So can you hold on for a second?
Sure. I'm happy to hang on.
Okay, so here's something kind of cool. You're probably familiar with SHRM, right? The Society for Human Resource Management. They have tons of video, keynotes, panels, webinars. They have tons of information. So if you're an HR person and you're like, oh, I'm dealing with this issue right now with this employee. I remember there was a keynote about it 2 months ago. How would you find that? You probably wouldn't, right? There's no way you'd find that. That's why SHRM has partnered with SOAR to use AI video search. So any of their members, one keyword entry, one key phrase, one speaker name, whatever it is, and they can immediately be transported the exact timestamp and clip right when they need it. So if they're struggling with that employment issue that needs to be done today, they can just look up that 10-minute clip, find the answer, get the resources they need, and move on with their life. Pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool. You can try it. Seriously, you can try it for free at soar.com/video search. That's soar.com/video search. We're still joined with Bonnie Glick. And with our last few minutes, I wanted to ask about, because your piece in Desert News, again, was dead on about kind of the dark uses of AI and what we have to look out for. 100% agree. It's a great piece. Again, we're going to link that at soar.com/podcast. But what about AI as also, because I want to end on a positive note, right? Like, an uplifting note. What about AI as the great equalizer? Like some of the things you call out in the Hill piece, the Desert News piece, some of your other work are, you know, the nefarious tracking uses of AI, 100% accurate. But, you know, in the U.S., we have the Patriot Act. And long before the Patriot Act, the government was spying on its own citizens. So overall, this stuff isn't that new, just maybe the ways to do it are. But can't technology level this playing field? So I think on a very entry level of like ways, kind of tracking where police are all the time, right? Or previous guest Joseph Nelson with RoboFlow, they have allowed anybody, like a high schooler in their garage, to build computer vision apps that normally require like 30 people, PhD teams, right? Mm-hmm. Or even like the Ukraine military, who is not as funded as the Russian military. They're using, according to our last guest, they're using AI to target Russian generals and military advisors. And I think of like hacktivism, like anonymous leaking DOJ data. I think of WikiLeaks. I think of AI tools being used to fight back propaganda. So can AI maybe be the great equalizer that people use to hold their governments in check or hold nefarious actors in check?
That's a great way to put it, Justin. And AI is, you used an important word there. AI is a tool. And the use of any tool and how it is used is going to determine whether it's used for the right things or used for the wrong things. And having access to AI so broadly dispersed among the global population really today is, I think, something that we're seeing in terms of innovation. So COVID probably was the thing that that brought us all together most as planet Earth. But one of the things that came out of COVID and through the use of AI and other tools was that you don't necessarily have to have a single nexus of power or information dispersion anywhere in the world. And by that, I mean, you know, you think about a superpower competition between the United States and China. Well, hey, there were great solutions coming out for addressing various aspects of COVID, whether they were new masking technologies or new education technologies to make sure that kids all over the world were able to continue their educations despite being in a global lockdown. What we saw was that this almost democratization, I'll call it, of technology allowed for this great ability worldwide for people to feel more connected. And that was absolutely through tools like artificial intelligence, as well as other technology tools. But again, remembering AI is a tool and it has to be used in a responsible way. If you can keep those two elements together, AI is only as smart as its programmers. And even when somebody ventures into the world of AI and machine learning, meaning that from very, like my original example of the email, I put your email address in and the email will automatically start, Dear Justin. Those kinds of tools have been developed by humans. We're not yet at that stage of the technology controlling us. We may feel like we're connected too much to our technology and we're connected too much to our smartphones. At the end of the day, though, we are in control. And that, I think, is probably the most important thing for people to remember, that AI is a tool. And when it works, it's amazing and it solves diseases or it helps to solve diseases. And when it's used in inappropriate ways to subvert human rights, it keeps people from being able to practice their faith or being able to protest peacefully.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great place to leave it. Bonnie Glick, the director of the Kroc Institute for Tech Diplomacy at Purdue University. Bonnie, what's the best way for people to reach out to you and read your stuff and see what you're up to?
They can always go to @techdiplomacy.org. That's our website. Follow me on Twitter, Bonnie_Glick. This is both human intelligence and artificial intelligence to find ways to find me. But I'm out there.
That's awesome. And of course, we'll put all that in the show notes at soar.com/podcast. Bonnie, thank you so much for joining me, joining the listeners, and helping us all uplift humanity.
Thank you, Justin. It's such an uplifting pleasure.
And hey, thanks for listening today. This is the AI to Uplift Humanity podcast.